you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for tuning into the Twilight Histories. This is a show inspired by role-playing games, where you are the hero. With music and sound effects, you will be transported to different worlds in the multiverse. Some worlds are familiar, others are totally exotic. Before we launch into Rings in the Mist Part 4, I'd like to say a thank you to one of our listeners. 9-year-old Merge is what he goes by. I don't know his real name, unfortunately. He wrote a really nice review for us on Apple Podcasts. Here's what he said. "Dude, I love the Plague Doctor episode. I thought it would be terrifying. You did a great job. Please do more like this." And that's my Halloween costume. I am 9 years old. Thank you so much. And you know, when I was your age, I discovered I loved reading. I never loved reading before, but I discovered it. I found these really cool books called Fighting Fantasy. And this podcast is actually based on the concept of those books, where you are the hero exploring different worlds. So I have a really special memory of being your age. And you know, when your imagination gets activated and you're just enjoying it so much, that passion can carry you through your whole life. And who knows where it will take you. When I'm writing these stories for you, I'm still that 9 or 10-year-old kid loving being taken away to different worlds. It was a special time. So Merge, or whatever your name is, I have a really good feeling about you. I think you're going to go on and do some amazing things with your imagination. And thank you so much for writing that review. It really means a lot to me. And with that, let's move on to today's story and get ourselves immersed in the wild and amazing imagination of Kevin Valbenesi. This is Rings in the Mist, Part 4.
Your ears ring and your eyes burn. The world comes and goes in hot bursts of white and red. You flail about, unsure of where the ground even is, or which direction is up. You can't even manage a coherent thought as the world drifts by in incomprehensible smears. You fall and roll, crumpling over, smashing your face against the cold stone. Pain erupts through your body, leaving you a throbbing pile of flesh, blind, deaf, and dumb to the death which doubtless hovers over you right now. All sense of the world has so thoroughly departed you that you can't even manage to scramble or sit up. It's as if everywhere your limbs go, they find no purchase or even a proper angle of approach. But that shock doesn't last, and soon enough, the world comes into focus, and the incessant ringing is replaced by shouts and cursing. As you finally manage to sit up, you see Seamus and his soldiers firing off what precious few rounds they have left at the robed specter who soars above you all. The plasma rounds bounce off the Shade's armor, doing little more than disturbing its position slightly. The sight leaves you even more dumbstruck than before. You're seized around the shoulder and you panic, floundering about until you realize that it's Abu Bakr who has you. Meeting his wide eyes, you understand the imperative without a word passing between the two of you. Run. Scrambling to your feet, you dash about, trying to find cover as the real soldiers do what they can to frustrate the lance-wielding enemy. Hide amongst the ruins of a collapsed building, and watch as the shadowy being takes aim with his lance and looses furious bolts of energy from its tip, instantly transforming one of the soldiers into little more than mist. Turning, the being unleashes its fury again, vaporizing the other soldier, leaving Seamus on his own. Enraged, but recognizing that he's outgunned and outmatched, Seamus turns to the last weapon at his disposal. He begins to load his final plasma grenade into the barrel-mounted launcher, but as his enemy's lance takes aim, he dives out of the way, now unable to take a shot. You lose sight of Seamus as he too rolls into the relative obscurity of a ruined structure. A blast of energy tears through the roof of that structure, but from the cursing that echoes out from among the rubble, you're assured that Seamus remains relatively unscathed. But what to do now? The observatory is within reach, but to rush out would leave you exposed to that ruinous ray. There is no conceivable way that you cross the veritable no man's land between here and the vast gate of that colossal building. You have no means to slow your attacker, with conventional weapons proving almost entirely ineffective. And there's little point in making some heroic last stand, but you can't exactly stay cowering here either. Indecision paralyzes you, but your adversary forces a decision regardless. A blast of energy tears through the remains of a wall next to you and Abu Bakr, leaving a molten mess in its place. The air is so hot that your skin damn near boils, and you're certain that if you remain for even an instant longer, your organs will cook inside you. There's nothing more to do but to take your chances. Rush out from behind cover, intent on reaching another collapsed structure, putting as much space and as many obstacles between you and your enemy as possible. In an instant, you feel a hot flash just graze by your ear, and in front of you, a pile of rubble turns into molten slag as the energetic blast connects with it. Pivoting on your heels, you and Abu Bakr try to circle around one of the buildings and link up with Seamus, but your foe simply flies overhead and fires another blast, melting the wall next to you and nearly causing it to smother you in its molten embrace. You dive forward, skidding against the slick stone until you crash against the remains of a low wall. Abu Bakr crashes into you shortly after, leaving you both in a tangled ball of arms and legs. You struggle desperately to untangle yourselves and to find cover, but your panic makes the whole matter an incomprehensible mess. Up above, the silent marauder drifts into place and raises its lance, intent on finally putting an end to you. With one last gasp, you shove Abu Bakr off, hoping to at least get him clear of the blast. But before you're turned to dust, a large rock comes flying out from the ruins below, striking your pursuer in the head. The stone glances off the metallic surface of the mask without even leaving a mark, but it does its job nonetheless. Turning, the lance now searches for whoever lobbed the projectile. You feel someone grasp your collar, pulled up and over the low wall, falling back under the cover of yet another ruined structure. You look up and see Seamus, eyes burning with rage and pure intent. You scramble to your feet, but stay low to avoid being spotted. Abu Bakr ducks into the room, joining you and Seamus. "Getting home's gonna be a bit messy, lads." Seamus grabs you and pulls you in close. "Boy can buy you some time. Can you get inside there and open a way home?" You look straight ahead, not wanting to promise anything to so desperate a man. And for your silence, you're struck across the face. "Yes or no?" You nod your head 1,000 times. "Yes." "Good. I'll take the grim bastard for a merry chase. I'll lead him out as far as I can, and then I'll come running in. You'd best not keep me waiting when I get there." Seamus rushes out, and you do likewise, bursting out from a different side of the building. You look skyward and see the specter circling about, hunting for its prey. It doesn't take too long for it to spot you, and soon it's bearing down on you, diving towards you as if to impale you with a spear. You pick up the pace, rushing for a rather large set of ruins ahead, hoping to lose your pursuer among the walls and what remains of the ceiling. And from there, a short dash should take you to the observatory. Glancing back again, you see the specter stop, its shot perfectly lined up. It extends its weapon out, certain of its success. There's a bright flash of light, but not from the enemy's lance. The signature blue-white flare of a plasma grenade erupts against the gleaming armor of the enemy, erupting outward and knocking the devil away a good distance. But even as it's flying through the air, it fires its own shot. The blinding stream of energy passes between you and Abu Bakr, nearly taking your heads off as it slams into the ground just ahead of the ruins you are rushing to. The ground erupts in a dazzling dance of heat and electricity, opening up a gaping hole into which you and Abu Bakr plunge, unable to overcome the momentum which carries you ahead. You tumble down into the darkness alongside falling boulders and molten bricks, speeding ever downward towards some new, hellish abyss. All you can do is close your eyes and brace yourself for impact. You force your hand over Abu Bakr's mouth, trying to stifle his screams as you pull a jagged piece of stone from his side, quickly replacing it with a wad of fabric torn from your own clothing. Tearing another long strip from Abu Bakr's own shirt, you try your best to tie the already crimson rag in place. You motion for him to be silent, seeing your own pleading expression in his eyes. With great effort, he clamps his jaw shut as you tug at the knot one more time. The exertion causes Abu Bakr to pass out, and at least for now, you see no reason to rouse him. You pull him over to a small pile of debris and lay him against it. You hold your finger under his nose for a beat, just to make sure that he's still breathing. That done, you turn to take stock of the situation. You look up and see the hole you fell through, which itself barely lets in any light from the ground above, seeming to have collapsed in on itself after you tumbled down. You move around, trying to get an angle on the world above the hole, but no obvious sightline presents itself. At least for now, you won't easily be spotted. Glancing around, you find yourself in what seems to be part of an old sewer system, or perhaps a cistern. You find the odd puddle here and there, and the remnants of what used to be a stairwell, with the way up blocked by the rubble, likely from the recent collapse. That you can see anything in here at all is a miracle, what with the poor, rusty light coming in from the hole above, and a few odd beams slipping in through the cracks in the ceiling. You walk about, looking for a way out, since the hole is too high to reach and the stairs are of no use to you. Any attempt to clear the rubble at the head of the steps would likely lead to a further collapse, burying you. Crossing the chamber, you find a collapsed section of the wall, and if the beams of light ahead are anything to go by, a way to at least advance a little bit. Getting closer, you see that there is a dry channel leading off to somewhere in the darkness, and with little choice, you decide that it's best to get moving. Returning to Abu Bakr, you rouse him, and slinging an arm over your shoulder, you help him walk towards your presumptive way out. His pace is deadly slow, and he groans, starting out modestly enough, but as you try to hasten the pace to something acceptable, he grows louder, prompting you to stop and press a finger to his lips. He's delirious, and quite sweaty now, and you're certain that any attempt to reason with him will be in vain. So, slow as it may be, You keep to a sluggish pace, keeping his complaints to a barely audible minimum. You lead your injured colleague into the channel chamber, helping him crawl down a mound of rubble and onto the dry channel bed. You walk without a word between you for several minutes, with Abu Bakr too overcome with pain and you too focused on finding the next shaft of light to lead you towards some way out. You're half expecting to just come up against a wall, but to stop and waste away is hardly a tempting alternative. And before you know it, you reach an intersection in the channels. Three routes confront you, each barely visible beyond 10 or so feet, save for pinpricks and thin slivers of light in the distance. Your mind races as you try to orient yourself, doing your best to remember which way you fled and which way the observatory was. Hazarding a guess, you think that you must be cutting sideways across the city. So, if you're going to chance a scramble for the observatory, then you'll need to take this right. Abu Bakr, I'd like to move a little faster. Do you think you can manage?
Aye. One foot in front of the other can't be so hard, can it?
He manages a weak chuckle and pulls his arm away from you, trying as hard as he can to stay upright. He presses his other hand to the crudely clogged wound and begins to shuffle forward, only a little faster than you were both managing before.
Time is not on our side. I know. I will go as fast as I can. But if I should drop, you must continue on.
You know I can't do that.
I'm afraid I won't give you much choice.
You want to stay and argue, but it's a poor use of what little energy you have left, let alone the fumes Abu Bakr must be running on now. Instead, you continue on down your new route, keeping an arm out just in case Abu Bakr collapses. The way is long and monotonous, but it also offers hope as an increasing number of fissures and holes in the ceiling allow in more light, revealing a few feet of dry channel bed at a time, and in one or two occasions, glimpses of what you believe may be the observatory well ahead. You don't take too long to try and get a better look, however, as you hear distant booms, some of which are close enough to loose dirt and even small rocks from the walls and ceiling surrounding you. That shadowy fiend is still chasing Seamus, or perhaps he's just unloading into the ruins, hoping to bury or annihilate you. At least he's moving, and if you can get above the ground and find a concealed approach to the observatory, you may be able to get in and get everything online and working before you're blasted into oblivion. But should your otherworldly adversary wise up and wait for you at the heart of that structure, then you will have no recourse. There will be no flight across the misty wastes to another ringed city, and no desperate last stand. As another blast resounds through the stone, you duck down, urging Abu Bakr to do likewise. You fear the roof collapsing with a well-placed shot, so you signal for Abu Bakr to crawl. Shuffling ahead on your palms and knees, you do your best to avoid the light-bearing cracks in the ceiling, unsure of how sharp your adversary's vision really is behind that mask. You creep about like insects, until you come upon a threshold flanked by two ornate pillars wrapped in spiraling reliefs of vines and foliage. Even now, pressed as you are for time, the sight of these two columns and the aura of their terrifying antiquity gives you pause. There's something about them, perhaps their girth or their alien patina. Whatever it may be, you feel as if this threshold exudes a power or mystery greater than the vortex you opened back in Athlone, chalking it up perhaps to your proximity to the observatory, You decide to press on past the nearly solid atmosphere, plunging into a deep, dark corridor without so much as a thread of light to guide the way. You decide it's best to crawl, unsure of whether there may be a precipitous drop or dislodge chunks of the ceiling hanging down. The last thing you want to do is tumble into some deeper pit, or even just break your nose. Squirming about like worms, you keep one hand clasped on Abu Bakr's back, terrified that he may simply collapse in silence. You keep up this creeping pace until you once again sense the atmosphere change, and then feel the first of many steps as you begin an ascent. Dragging Abu Bakr up, you glimpse a tall slit of light at the end of the steps, its crimson hues signaling a return to the upper realm. Leaving Abu Bakr for a moment, you stand tall and try to peer through the aperture, creating that narrow slit. As you place your hands against the cold stone, you immediately feel the familiar features of a door, and with little prudence, you begin to heave, not pausing to check if your otherworldly pursuer is waiting on the other side. The stone groans as you heave the door aside, and you're almost blinded by the rush of red light that bursts into the stairwell. Allowing your eyes a moment to adjust, you find yourself confronted by the towering colossus, which is the observatory. Its dome rising up above the ruins you've emerged into. You immediately realize that you are exposed, and you nearly hurl yourself back into the stairwell as you realize that the sky is open above you. Clinging to the inside of the stairwell, you peer out, scanning the sky for any sign of your pursuer. The coast is clear, and now you can turn your attention to the structure before you. Between you and your gateway to the stars are the ruins of what must have been a grand temple of the Tuatha De Danann. The destruction, rendered here in stone and metal, is that of collapse, with the structure creating a crater-like depression in the earth. As you cast your eyes about, you see that the debris littering the outer rim might provide for an awkward climb out of the pit and up to the observatory. At any rate, it's your best shot. But your wandering eyes cannot help but be led to the fragments of antique art still glistening in the rusty hues of this dying world. Some shattered beyond recognition, but others resting there in solemn silence. Vast slabs bearing bas-reliefs rest at every conceivable angle among the stones, while the marred visages of forgotten heroes stare out at you from between collapsed columns. You almost lose yourself in complete awe of the ruined relics, but a labored groan from Abu Bakr grounds you. Returning to your friend, you check his side and find your impromptu bandage completely soaked through. Throwing his arm over your shoulder, you lead him out into the ruins. He's still sluggish, but the pace is enough that you can quickly move between what few covered spots remain, avoiding any hostile gaze from above. Like you, Abu Bakr's eyes are captured by the glorious remnants of this antique space. You feel his already labored pace slow as you pass by a bas-relief jutting out from a hole in the ground at almost 45 degrees. From what you can see, the scene depicts Danann warriors, dressed in their magnificent armor, standing in a phalanx-like formation, their weapons raised and firing great bolts of energy at robed adversaries who collapse back into some great gaping ring. What exists beyond the ring is hard to make out, since the rest of the relief is buried in the ground. You surmise that here, the Tuatha De Danann who established themselves in this world repelled an invasion attempt by the shadowy others, the presumed Formorians who drift beyond the walls of Athlone and the other abandoned cities you so recently left behind. These Danann fought bravely to hold this world against all invaders, led by the mighty warriors of old. But in the end, this world also ended up an empty husk, its destruction more complete than the haunted wastes of the other.
It's always for nothing, isn't it?
What's that? You ask.
How many times have you set your feet down upon some alien world and found it empty or populated only by dust? Even in the living worlds we voyage to, there is always the shadow of doom creeping over the horizon. All those worlds, those timelines, all are inevitably rushing to the same conclusion.
I think the gash in your side is making you a bit pessimistic.
Perhaps.
You peer out from under cover, ensuring that the sky is clear before lining up your course to the next sheltered area. You cross the open space, passing between the shattered remains of statues, perhaps of soldiers, given the odd chunk depicting a pauldron or a breastplate. As you go on your way, your eyes are once again drawn to a luminous remnant, a gigantic bas-relief resting almost upright, still fixed to the wall which held it up in more prosperous times. This time, the scene is one of utter conquest, as Danann warriors march in lockstep with one another through vast rings, each gateway decorated with a starscape. At the heart of the throng of warriors conducting their efforts with a steady and stern expression is a rather familiar figure. It takes you a moment, but you recognize the distinct armor and the cold, expressionless visage of that shadowy figure who hunts for you even now across these crimson wastes. Here, enthroned as High King, the figure directs the armies to cross into countless other worlds, one hand stretched out in exaltation, and the other grasping at a lance. The Tuatha De Danann, it seems, were not solely interested in spreading the light of their wisdom throughout the cosmos. Unlike those who first raised Athlone on top of its ancient hill, these men and women saw it fit to wrest control of those infinite expanses at the end of a spear. Confronted, perhaps, by more invaders, they decided to chart a course of conquest until every star in the night sky shone down upon them in deference. With such lofty goals carried out under the unfeeling gaze of their High King, you wonder how it was that this seat of the Danann Imperium was left more desolate than Rome after its many sackings. What doom was visited upon them? How did the countless multitudes lay dead and forgotten in the streets as their warriors plunged deep into the galaxy to subjugate one world after another? And how is it that only one should remain behind to tend to the ruined world? He, perhaps, who commanded the legions in their pursuit of galactic dominance. Your answer doesn't take long, for as you reach your next bit of cover and look to the first accessible slope, you find one last bas-relief laying in three broken chunks among the rubble. Disjointed as the scene may be, and inferior as the workmanship is, it doesn't take much to discern the general concept. In this distressed triptych, you see a maelstrom of Danann warriors surging in every possible direction, crashing against each other, driving some into the large rings while others surge forth from them in hot pursuit of their brethren. And looking over it all, now hurling great bolts of energy from their spear like mighty Zeus on Olympus, is the same shadowy figure who now hunts for you across the blood-red sky. War, it seems, came for the Danann, They surged across the cosmos to prevent another invasion, likely laying low all who stood in their path. But at the end, it seems they turned their bloodlust inward. What sparks set that flame ablaze is beyond you. No further scene offers any clue to the ultimate cause of this galaxy-wide self-immolation. Or there was perhaps a peaceful resolution to it all. That anything was recorded at all means that some survived the cataclysmic battle, and perhaps they sought to start anew, at least until some final conflagration would leave them all dead in the streets of their mighty cities. Perhaps a happy ending, fleeting as it may have been, lays buried under the rubble, but the absence of any living Donnan soul, save for the specter who hunts you now, leads you to believe that the Civil War led to complete and utter destruction of the race. In one fell swoop, some grave disagreement led this noble and ambitious people to paint the Milky Way red with their own blood. The fruits of their labor, the splendor of their civilization, was left to phantoms and hapless travelers to stumble upon. There might be no more epic cycles, no songs of the old gods, no accounts of pioneers under alien suns. These two, among the countless worlds conquered by the Donnan, may be the mere harbingers of a galaxy scourged of life by the very people who sought to have it bloom under their auspices.
What shall come to pass when all the world is burned? And dead are all the gods, and all the champions, and all mankind.
Abu Bakr barely gets the last few words out before growing weak again. You see tears in his eyes, and for a moment, he becomes inconsolable. He drops to his knees, and buries his face in his hands. You try to help him up, but he's beyond reason. His limbs heavy with defeat. He doesn't sob. He merely kneels there, contemplating the ruin of the legends he once dreamed of meeting. Unlike you, who joined this doomed expedition in search of more scientific pursuits, he came with a desire to learn about the ancient Donnan that he doubtless spent hours reading about. The heroes and villains of the epics he must have committed to memory are now all gone, ruined by the feuds that are common among men. Humanity, perhaps, makes the gods familiar, but it makes their end predictable as well. A long beat passes, and finally, you decide that there's no more time for Abu Bakr to mourn. Seizing him firmly, you haul him to his feet, but you exert such force in the action that he cries out, clasping at his injured side. The shout echoes through the ruins with great vigor, seeming so loud as to be heard halfway across the city. Terror seizes you, and you feel the hairs on your body stand erect as a familiar energy begins to fill the air. You have no doubt you've just surrendered your position. And now, despite Abu Bakr's protests, you get moving, running around the ruins, desperately searching for some refuge from the hunter who is doubtless closing in on you. Escape by the sloping sides of the ruins is not an option. Not at this distance. Instead, you elect to hide, scurrying about like vermin in search of some crack through which you might escape. You cast your eyes back constantly, half expecting to see that ominous shade descending from the sky to end your brief interlude in this alien purgatory. But while sight offers little, the building electrical current in the air assures you that the enemy will soon be upon you. And then you hear it. You hear that raspy, metallic breathing. The lonely dirge which precedes the arrival of this realm's High King. his morbid eminence, the prince of these forgotten wastes. The Dark One approaches. And with no time and little hope left, you hurl yourself at the nearest crevice, praying that you escape the gaze of that merciless monarch. You lay flat on your belly, inhaling dust and practically kissing the cold, wet stone beneath you. Abu Bakr clamps his jaw down on your forearm, the best implement available to stifle his groans. You both hide in the shadows beneath a mound of masonry, likely what used to be part of the ceiling, given the gaping hole above you. Fortunately, the pile collapsed in such a way as to offer you and your companion a crevice under which you can hide like cockroaches. Up above, gliding like a wraith, the Dark One searches about the ruins, its lance raised and pointed ahead, ready to annihilate all who appear before it. The specter drifts over the remains of the heroic monuments and reliefs which mark the triumphs and travesties wrought by the Tuatha De Danann. That malevolent subject at the heart of the final scene now carries out what little purpose is left to it, scourging what little life remains from this once vibrant world. You pray that the ruddy dimness of the atmosphere and the depth of your crushing retreat are enough to conceal you from the cold, metallic gaze of that elder god, the iron-fisted demagogue who led its people to ruin. And the sound of its raspy, metallic breathing echoes throughout the ruins, washing over your shivering body like waves on the Arctic shore. Abu Bakr sinks his teeth deep into your flesh, piercing the fabric around your forearm, and given the warm rush that follows the heavy bite, you have no doubt that he's drawn blood. Whether from a worsening of his pain or terror at the threat of discovery, your dear comrade is threatening to crush your forearm between his teeth as he desperately tries to stifle his moaning. You find yourself shoving your other forearm into your own mouth to stifle your own tremendous groans. Your eyes water as your own teeth pierce your flesh. The specter drifts closer to your position, casting the tip of its spear around in a wide arc, searching for its prey. You press your feet against the back of your little crevice, assuring yourself that you're as far back as you can go. You hold your breath, doing everything in your power to be still and silent as the fringes of your pursuer's cloak draw nearer to you with every passing moment. You think, for an instant, that you've been spotted, and that you're about to be turned to dust, especially as the fringes of the specter's cloak come right up to the edge of your hiding place, practically brushing against your face. You hear the deep, labored, metallic breathing from behind its mask. Every raspy breath is like 1,000 fires lit below your belly, manifesting needles of pure terror in your flesh. But you dare not move. You remain frozen in place, mere inches from your would-be executioner. Its breathing becomes sharper, preceding a guttural groan from behind the mask. You feel the air become charged and see the fringes of the specter's cloak snap back as it pulls away from your crevice. There's a flash of light, followed by an explosion. Dust and rubble scatter around the ruins, some of it rushing into your eyes and nostrils. You fight the urge to sneeze or brush the irritating particles from your eyes as the choking debris fills your hiding place. There's another flash of light, and a blast, and another flash of light, and another blast. You hear stones crashing down against the floor, and masonry grinding as it slides out of place. One final roar booms through the ruins before you see the shadowy form rushing away from your position and launching itself skyward to continue its hunt elsewhere. Even now, you dare not move. You stay frozen in place for several seconds, minutes, perhaps even a quarter of an hour, before you finally unlock your jaw and release your bloody forearm. You pull your other arm back, realizing that Abu Bakr is no longer biting down on it. You glance over and find his eyes shut. Panicking, you hold a finger under your friend's nostrils, finding solace only after you feel the regular rhythm of a light breeze. He must have passed out from the pain. You're not sure when he'll stir, but you decide to make the most of this blissful interlude. Like a worm piercing the moist earth, you crawl out from your hiding place, dragging your belly along the ground until you can prop yourself up on your elbows. You scramble forward a bit more until you can finally stand up. You rub the dust from your eyes and stretch your limbs out. All around you, what little dignity remained in this sacred space has been completely blotted out. The remnants of the reliefs and statuary are now little more than fragments and smoldering heaps. A thick, choking smoke rises from what used to be the central bas-relief. The wisps emerging from what used to be a depiction of the Dark One itself. Now, you're greeted by a black mass, its shadowy monotony interrupted by the occasional flicker of embers from within its ashen surface. Turning your attention then to a more hopeful vista, you look up at a freshly collapsed section of the ruins, making the previously difficult ascent much easier thanks to the sloping arrangement of the debris. It won't be easy, but you should be able to carry Abu Bakr up and into the observatory. You will be exposed, but as you search the sky, you see the outline of that sinister shadow shrinking into the distance as it follows some other hunch on the far side of the city. You waste no time, hurrying back to haul Abu Bakr out from the crevice. Your arms burn, still sore from the vice-like bites you inflicted upon yourself. Abu Bakr's body is limp, and while it's tempting to rouse him and get him to walk, you fear that he may begin to cry out or groan once he becomes conscious of his pain again. Your best option, then, is to heave him up onto your back and begin a laborious trek across the ruins and up onto your impromptu staircase. Your ascent is anything but quick and easy. Between your weakened state, the weight of your unconscious friend, or the uncertain stability of the stones beneath your feet, there's much to make the short distance from here to the observatory feel as daunting as crossing the Sahara. But you have little choice. You must press on. Taking one labored step after another, forcing yourself ever upwards until you finally reach the top, cresting the mound of rubble to find yourself confronted by the bridge across the observatory's moat. Taking but one moment to breathe and to look out for that shadowy stalker, you then strike out for the entrance to the world terminus, praying that at least one door might find you a way home. Never in the wildest dreams of the Emperor Justinian did such a dome rise so high. You could doubtless fit one of the minarets which now flank the Hagia Sophia inside the cavernous space and not even come close to grazing the ceiling. You believe your eyes may betray you, for at the highest reaches there appear to be the wispy beginnings of clouds obscuring what remains of the starscape mapped to the surface of the dome. There is no doubt that this structure was once a magnificent world terminus, a vital node in the Donnan network which spread out to capture the breadth of the Milky Way. But now, the ravages of time and war have left this place a tomb, moldering and slowly giving way to its eventual collapse. That the dome still stands is a miracle, for a good third of the walls holding it up have collapsed, and indeed, part of the dome itself has fallen away, laying shattered on the ground, exposing the interior to the harsh, ochre skies above. What concerns you most, however, are the shattered remains of great rings set into the walls, bordered by elaborate floral displays with twisting and turning spirals all about them. If you were to hazard a guess, these rings are the portals depicted in that sorrowful chronicle of the Tua de Danann, the gateways through which they ventured out into the cosmos, and from which their collapse came rushing back in. There are 6 in total, roughly 1/3 the height of the structure, and all but 1 have been utterly destroyed or buried behind rubble too vast to move. Above the rings is a series of circular panels, all set into the wall, running all the way around, each depicting vague spiraling designs. In front of every ring is one of the now familiar podiums, your only means of directing a potential gateway home. Some are barely standing, with chunks of them having been cleaved right off, while others exist in a fluid and malformed state, as if they'd been melted. Fortunately enough, the podium standing in the front of the lone intact ring is itself in fairly good condition. And so, the course ahead is obvious. But before you cross the vast chamber, you are confronted by the other occupants therein. Spread about the floor like locusts freshly descended upon a field, lay the remains of hundreds of warriors, their bones poking out from the armor which aids in maintaining their general structural integrity. They lay scattered about, mouths agape in a final death cry, limbs splayed out in every direction. Some, it would seem, met a harsher end, with their armor melting around the bones to forever encase them, its irresistible grip. They all rest here, scattered before the portal through which they doubtless emerged, their weapons still clasped in their bony hands. Your mind races to many potential conclusions. Perhaps they were the last line of defense against their invading brethren, or maybe these were the invaders, cut down and welded into place by the destructive beam your adversary wields with such ruthless efficiency. Perhaps this is the scene of some climactic final battle to decide who might stand as king over the ashen pile that was the Danann Imperium. Regardless of their identity or purpose in being here, one thing is certain. None of them manage the monumental task set before you. None had escaped. As if the ghosts of those fallen warriors were now whispering in your ears, you can feel the creeping sense of defeat washing over you. Where once your muscles were taut and ready to explode, they now turn to jelly, your spine melting away as you're forced to consider that there will be no escape. All your ingenuity, and the countless hours trekking across the barren wastes, and your desperate flight from the dark lord of this hellish sphere, might all have been for naught. You might die here, and become nothing more than another set of bleached bones among the multitude. And, in time, perhaps some other unwitting traveler, some foolish adventurer from another realm, might stumble over your remains and realize the futility of their circumstances. A groan from Abu Bakr directs your attention to the practical matters at hand, as does a splash of red at your feet as he coughs up blood. His life is nearly over, and while you do consider putting him out of his misery to spare him some greater, final disappointment, you elect to at least go through the motions. You will do what you can to give him comfort, and at least offer a modicum of hope to this dying man, as your inevitable end doubtless glides towards you now. The first task in this final stretch is to restore power to the portal, and thinking back to the Observatory of Athlone, you begin to search for the remains of a reflecting pool. If the rings are the portals themselves, then there's still a good chance that the reflecting pools might offer some means of conducting the necessary energy. You spin about, trying to discern the unique feature of the room that will unlock any of these potential doorways. But there's nothing. There is no tri-faced god to gaze towards the entrance, offering guidance, or at least a clever way to hide the mechanism. You begin casting aside bones and armor, disrespecting the resting dead in this half-hearted attempt to do something, anything, for the rapidly expiring colleague you dragged in here. Almost immediately, you're splashing down into one of the reflecting pools, stooping down to observe the center, finding the remnants of a statue's base. With not even a foot remaining to indicate which way the figure might have faced, you can only seize the base and turn it, hoping that a discernible click might reveal the proper position. Fortunately, the mechanism does render a satisfying click, and no sooner than you've heard it do you feel the energy in the room become ever more present, charging the air. You leap back, expecting the pool to fall away, but instead, the water merely becomes luminous and slightly perturbed. Then, the entire building shakes, preceding a bright flash of light which erupts from the interior of the intact ring. Not merely blinding, the surge of force knocks you off your feet and away from the old reflecting pool, causing you to crash down on a number of bones, some of them piercing your flesh. You writhe in pain as you pull the bone fragments from your back. You cry out to Abu Bakr, and he calls back,
"I'm still here. And you've still got it."
You heave yourself up, and with slow, lumbering steps, you march towards the podium, your eyes stinging from the initial blast of light. Where there was once stone, you are now greeted by a familiar sight. A raging torrent of energy and dazzling light awaits, its gaping throat shifting to and fro as the vortex attempts to stabilize. It's a gateway to somewhere, and charting its course is the next matter set before you. Placing your hands upon the podium, you do what's always served you best, and manhandle it. Without a globe to turn, you're certain that the surface itself is movable. And it is. Said surface contains a number of glyphs set in a circle around the center, and a quick glance around the walls confirms that the glyphs on the podium correspond to those which are above the portals. A lone pointer, fixed near the top edge of the podium's otherwise empty center, likely denotes which glyph is selected, and if you take that to its logical conclusion, then each glyph must represent some world out there in the Milky Way. But none offer you an easy solution. No obvious allegory of the Earth or any familiar celestial body. Each glyph is merely a collection of spiraling designs, bereft of runes, numbers, or anything that might offer guidance. As you turn the podium ring, the vortex grows violent, its throat thrashing around and belching forth intense blasts of energy. Each turn of the podium to line up a new glyph rocks the observatory, taxing what must be systems laboring under centuries of ruin and neglect. At any moment, the portal could collapse and bring the entire building down on your heads. but a glance over at Abu Bakr, who is now teetering on the edge of consciousness, and likely life, forces your hand and causes you to disregard the obvious risk. But finding the glyph which leads to Earth would hardly be the end of your troubles. You were transported to this brooding rock after your flight from Earth, and to return there might simply deliver you into the shadowy claws of the would-be Formorians. You don't even know what you're really searching for, or why you keep turning the dial. Now is the time to make a decision. Now is the time to take the plunge. Setting one glyph in place, you step away from the podium, rushing over to take Abu Bakr up, slinging his arm over your shoulder. He's barely conscious, and at this rate, you doubt he will even survive the trip. Despite all that, you see the whisper of a smile on his lips.
They did a good job sending you. Resourceful to the end.
Don't speak. You need to save your strength. You begin to lumber towards the portal. We're gonna get you some help, okay? Just hang on a little bit longer.
Steadily then, let Bran roll. Not far to the land of women. Emne, with many hues of hospitality. Thou wilt reach before the setting of the sun.
Abu Bakr manages a weak chuckle just as you reach the edge of the vortex. Confronted by the raging vortex, your eyes strain to make sense of its chaotic surge. To plunge within is to deliver yourself into the hands of uncertainty. But that is better, perhaps, than the inevitable doom which awaits you here in Tekduin, the land of the Dark One. Before you can take that final leap, you hear a commotion at the far end of the observatory. The piercing curses of a certain soldier draw your attention to the vaulted corridor which precedes the portal chamber. Seamus, bloody, bruised, and smoldering, comes charging in, looking like Philippides after the victory at Marathon.
You bastards aren't leaving without me.
He hustles, tossing aside his rifle as he goes, gaining just a measure of extra speed.
I'm telling you right now, that doorway better stay open.
Hot on Seamus' heels, a shadowy specter comes surging in, its lance raised and ready to fire. It clears the corridor and shoots up into the air, taking aim. Just before Seamus can reach you, the specter fires a blast of energy from its lance, striking the podium, causing it to erupt in a dazzling display of heat and great arcs of lightning. Seamus slams into you, and you nearly tumble back into the vortex, which begins to rage uncontrollably. Your legs dangle out into the void, your muscles stinging from the intense electrical sensation. You draw back from the edge, unsure of where this gateway will lead you now that the mechanism directing it has been destroyed. Looking up, you see your cloaked adversary lowering its weapon and drifting downward. It stops just off the ground and gazes at you from behind its cold mask. The blast Seamus unleashed on it earlier did a fair amount of damage, leaving the armor scarred and the mask itself crisscrossed with deep scratches. The specter stretches its arms out as if to block your path, leaving you trapped between it and the maelstrom to your back. Reaching up, the specter seizes its mask with taloned hands and draws it away, revealing a pale face framed by long, spindly wisps of white hair. Cold, black eyes stare back at you, betraying a grin which is doubtless hidden behind the rebreather fixed to the ghoul's face. It's as if you were looking upon the face of Methuselah or Cain after countless eons wandering in the transcendental wastes. the last of the Danann, their dark lord, the instrument, perhaps, of their ultimate undoing, looks on with mocking contempt. Tossing aside his spear, the Dark Lord gestures to the vortex beyond. With his other hand, he pulls at his rebreather, yanking it off of his face, causing him to cough and spit up as he does, but all the while, laughing between every gasping, wheezing breath. Between those wheezing cackles, the ancient lord offers a few words in a language that your translator just manages to process. Broken as the words come through initially, the message in time becomes clear.
You will find nothing among the stars. We were travelers like you, but we learned too late that every path finds the same end. So, go. Be free. I will see you again at the end of it all.
Glancing back at the vortex raging behind you, it's hard not to consider the endless cascade of lifeless worlds which await you, or the utter annihilation which may ensue once you're firmly in its embrace. You consider how lost you truly are, and how despite all that, you decide it's best to take a chance. If this will all be for naught, you'd at least like to know what awaits at the end of it all. And so, with little more than a nod to Seamus, and a glance at that husk of a god standing before you, you heave up Abu Bakr and turn to face the spiraling gateway to the stars. You step towards the light. All weight and sense of direction vanish, and soon enough, you are hurtling through time and space, the infinite expanse before you. And like the Tuatha De Danann who tread this path in the centuries past, it is time for you too to depart for newer and stranger realms.
That was Rings in the Mist Part 4 by Kevin Valbenesi. If you're enjoying this series, please consider becoming a patron of the Twilight Histories. This show is entirely supported by our generous Patreon community, and it honestly wouldn't be possible without them. Our patrons are the true heroes of the Twilight Histories. They are the guides and the agents that allow the Twilight Histories to exist. Please become a part of our community. Go to the website at twilighthistories.com and click through to our Patreon page. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.